Hello, this is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday, the 12th of October, 2018. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And your readers today are Maria Head.
Hello.
John Regan.
Hello there.
Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Tom Williams. The main headlines this week are: free parking returns to RHCH, hundreds join battle to stop new town plans, and the cost of missing NHS appointments. So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Maria?
Yes, of course. Free parking to return at RHCH, but charges only lifted for some visiting the city's hospital. Free parking is being reintroduced at Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital, RHCH. For certain patients and visitors, it has been confirmed. The Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, HHFT, which runs the hospital, as well as those in Basingstoke and Andover, confirmed the decision for those receiving concessionary rates. The Trust, which has a turnover of £385 million a year, said it made the move after hearing the concerns of patient groups. Alex Whitfield, Chief Executive, said, "I know people feel very strongly about parking charges when they attend hospital, and even the concessionary rates we were charging were challenging for some patients. We heard concerns from particular groups, for example, patients coming for chemotherapy and parents and carers of children who are in hospital. Because we take feedback from our users very seriously, we have reviewed our charges and made the decision to offer free parking to those users who had previously been charged reduced rates. Our parking charges go directly into helping us fund patient care, and we know that other hospitals do charge concessionary rates, but we feel this is the right decision for us and our patients." HHFT confirmed those who will receive free parking include patients attending for chemotherapy, patients visitors attending every day after 1 week of attendance, or outpatients who have been attending for more than 2 weeks and continue to attend at least twice a week with the same illness or condition. Visitors to patients being cared for in the intensive care unit or the neonatal unit, to inpatients whose stay in hospital has been more than 1 week, providing they are visiting every day, or to inpatients whose stay in hospital has been 2 weeks or more, providing they are visiting at least twice per week. Carers staying overnight with children who are inpatients, relatives or carers of patients who are receiving end-of-life care. Frankie Webb, chairman of the Cancer Services Partnership Group, said, "We're delighted the Trust have listened to the views not only of our group, but other important voluntary care and support groups in the hospital's area. This vital change will not only reduce costs for cancer patients, but also reduce their stress at what is already a very stressful time for them. Last December, HHFT came under fire after it saw more than 1.25 million generated through parking in the year to April 2017. Parking revenue at the Trust hospitals soared by £224,409, an increase of nearly 22%. Those figures followed a drop in 2015-16 with £1,026,846 being generated, compared with £1,157,000. Sorry, read that again. £1,157,227 the previous year. Health bosses defended the income, saying the money was either used in maintaining the car parks or was invested in the trust's care services. The figures were disclosed as part of an investigation by the Press Association, which also revealed that NHS hospitals made a record £174 million from charging patients, visitors and staff for car parking, a rise of 6%. Speaking at the time, Shadow Health Secretary Jonathan Ashworth said, "Hospital parking charges are an entirely unfair and unnecessary burden, which disproportionately affects the most vulnerable people using our health service." When asked why the decision was limited to only concessionary users, Mr. Whitfield said, "We have worked hard to keep parking charges to a minimum and have some of the lowest tariffs in the region compared to other trusts. The money raised through parking charges is needed to maintain our car parks and make it as easy as possible for patients and visitors to park. Any surplus is reinvested in the trust, helping us to provide the best possible care for our patients. Patients and visitors who receive income support or other similar benefits can reclaim transport costs as part of the government healthcare travel scheme, while free parking remains available for all disabled and blue badge holders in designated spaces."
Hundreds join battle to stop new town plans. They want to make a killing by killing the countryside. Those were the words of Winchester's MP Steve Brine at a meeting on Monday when around 200 residents discussed fighting plans for a new town. As previously reported, initial plans have been revealed to build 6,000 homes on the Sutton Scotney estate at Mitchell Dever Station, which marks the latest chapter in a nearly 30-year planning saga. The plans, which it's said will create more than 5,000 jobs, have proved highly controversial, just as previous schemes have, and were submitted in response to Winchester City Council's call for sites, which was part of their local plan review. It is currently owned by the Magnier family, who are working in partnership with the O'Flynn Group on the plans. On Monday evening, the Diva Society, which was set up to fight the original scheme in 1990, held a public meeting to garner support for the campaign against the new town, which also saw City Council leader, Portfolio for Housing and Ward Councillor Caroline Horrell speak. Tessa Robertson, chairman of the Diva Society, told residents that if it went ahead, the scheme would be around three times the size of Petersfield. Around the size of Petersfield, and three times bigger than Barton Farm, and six times the size of South Wanston. It was also claimed that it would result in the loss of the last major green gap between Basingstoke and Southampton. Miss Robertson said, "We were really taken by surprise when the O'Flynn Group first revealed the plans. Unfortunately, we've asked for more detail, but they've not responded yet." During the meeting, MP Steve Brine heavily criticised the latest proposal. He said, "It does make me wonder how many times and how many ways we have to say no to a new town." Mr. Brine added that the development would act as another commuter town servicing London, and he further said, "This is still an important green gap between here and Basingstoke." As previously reported, the Magniers bought the Sutton Scotney estate a couple of years ago for a reported £45 million from Zurich, previously called Eagle Star. Since 1990, numerous attempts to have the land earmarked for a new town of up to 12,500 houses have been defeated. The proposed site this time is smaller, lying south of the Blackwood, east of the mainline railway and west of the A33. Defending the plant in a letter, O'Flynn Group Chairman Michael O'Flynn said, "These new proposals are significantly better than previous ones, as they clearly show this site is uniquely well-placed for Winchester City Council to locate well-planned, sensitive development which delivers much-needed new homes and employment. Over the next few months, we will be seeking to engage with residents, councillors and interest groups in the plans for the site, ensuring that the master plan is open for comment. At this time, we're committed to working in parallel with the council's local plan review process." Following the meeting, a spokesman for the Diva Society confirmed that around 150 people had signed up to volunteer in the fight against the Mitchell devastation scheme. And that's accompanied by a picture showing that packed meeting with over 200 people. And I think it's fair to say that the people present don't look very happy.
The cost of missed NHS appointments. Missed appointments throughout the county have cost health trusts more than £5 million, new figures have revealed. Data from NHS England shows that between January and June, more than 52,000 people either did not show up for an appointment or arrived too late to be seen at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, that is HHFT, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, Southern Health NHS Foundation Trust, that is SH, and University Hospital Southampton NHS Foundation Trust, that is UHS. The news will concern trust chiefs at a time when the NHS is struggling to cope with an increasing demand on resources. The figures show that in total, 13,460 missed appointments cost HHFT around £1.62 million, and 868 missed sessions cost SH £104,000. However, the figures were almost double for UHS, where 28,177 people missed appointments, costing around £3.38 million. Dr. Caroline Marshall, Chief Operating Officer at UHS, said, "The impact of missed appointments on the running of our services is significant, particularly at a time of great pressure and demand. HHFT and SH have concerns about the impact of missed appointments." Malcolm Ace, HHFT Chief Financial Officer, said, "Any waste in our hospitals means we can spend less on the care of our patients. As a trust, we already communicate with our patients, highlighting the impact of missed appointments through appointment letters and materials displayed in our hospitals. Over the last 18 months, we have introduced SMS text appointment reminders to boost attendance and allow patients a further opportunity to let us know if they can no longer attend their appointment, and we are already beginning to see positive results of this." Mr. Race added, "If we learn early enough that a patient cannot make the appointment, we can offer it to another patient." Paula Anderson, SH Finance Director, said, "Missed appointments are always a cause for concern and can be indicative of an emerging issue for someone. Perhaps they are experiencing a crisis or need support in order to attend a clinic or hospital, and we do work to provide additional help where people may need it. We appreciate that sometimes it is unavoidable for patients to miss planned appointments. However, it is true that missed appointments do have a cost for us, as they do all parts of the NHS. If someone needs to miss an appointment and can let us know, it enables others to be seen more quickly and avoid potentially unnecessary waste of public money." Across England, almost 2.9 million appointments were missed in the 6 months at the start of the year, costing the NHS around £350 million. On average, an outpatient appointment costs the NHS £120, according to the latest resources cost data.
That concludes the headlines, and we continue with the obituary notices. The following deaths have been announced. Brown, Eileen May Brown, peacefully. Clark, Barbara Joan Clark, after a short illness, aged 89. Davidge, Terence Davidge, peacefully, aged 81. Gemmell, Douglas Stewart Gemmell, suddenly, aged 67. And Mallock, Charles Edward Julian Mallock, peacefully, aged 81. Continuing with letters to the editor, the first letter is read by John. Thank you, John.
Yes, and this one's headed NHS Admiration. Sir, I refer to the editorial comment in the Chronicle on September the 27th. The NHS is indeed much loved by all of those who have experienced the care, devotion and pure vocational compassion and kindness of the staff. However, efficiency, or more importantly, effectiveness, depends upon many factors, including even the time of day or night and the location in the country. That's the real world. From personal experience and that of others who've received outstanding and compassionate treatment, there is nothing but admiration for the medical staff and indeed all who work together to deliver the most caring and enthusiastic service. Because of the proactive medical staff at Winchester Royal Hampshire County Hospital, two very serious health issues were identified and appropriate treatment was applied. I'm still amazed at the positive attitude and genuine care that I experienced. I write such a glowing letter of praise from the heart because the frontline staff deserve such positive acknowledgement. My own treatment extended to a radiotherapy treatment in Southampton, where the genuine care and compassion was tangible and welcome. Whenever possible, I visit RHCH in Winchester to say thank you to the medical staff and nursing team. Notably, this team refreshingly includes the person who maintains the cleanliness of the treatment ward. And that letter comes from Simon Lever, who lives in Juniper Close, Batcher Farm, in Winchester.
And now a letter from Judith Martin, headed Dumbing Down. Sir, a sign in Winchester Discovery Centre says, we are moving and weeding our stock at the moment. New books will be arriving soon. We apologise for any inconvenience this causes. I don't mind being mildly inconvenienced, but I mind acutely that this process of weeding seems to mean serious dumbing down. When there were two libraries, reference and lending, it was clear that nothing in the reference library could be borrowed, but the stock was reliable. I understand the amalgamation of the two collections. After all, the building of the old reference library was falling down. And I appreciate the design of the refurbished lending library. But I don't appreciate the degradation of the reference section. After several annoyances, an incomplete collection of Pevsner's Buildings of England series, for example, or the vanishing to the depths of the building of the important Victoria County History series, I'm prompted to write by the sudden disappearance of the numerous volumes of the Oxford Dictionary of National Biography. When I went to look for them yesterday, that was October the 3rd, the shelves were bare. These may be slightly rarefied interests, but they are fundamental to a good reference library. And most infuriating of all, this cull has been carried out with no consultation. The response will be that the Oxford Dictionary of National Biography and the Victoria County Histories are available online. But like many people now, I spend huge amounts of time at a computer screen, and sometimes it's good to get out, have a walk and a change of scenery. Probably many people who go to consult the reference section will stay for a coffee, or perhaps buy a card, or look at the excellent exhibitions, or even, as I did yesterday, borrow some books I hadn't even thought of before. Hampshire County Council is removing the chance of doing that and damaging its own income and user numbers. I wonder who took this decision to cull and to dumb down, and if it might be reversed and at least consulted upon before it gets worse. And that comes from Judith Martin, Romsey Road, Winchester.
And now we have a letter from Kay Jobson, which is headed Farm Fears 2. Sir, many valid concerns have been raised in connection with the proposed 32,000 hen egg farm near Crabwood, Winchester. I should like to add another to this growing list and question, given the serious oversupply of free-range eggs, whether this facility is required. Unsurprisingly, in the current economic climate, farmers have looked to diversify, resulting in far too many of them entering the free-range market. Egg industry leaders have been warning for some time that the market could run into surplus, and that is exactly what has now happened. Suppliers are now increasing by 10% each year, according to the British Free-Range Egg Production Association, BFREPA, Chief Executive Robert Gooch, who expressed his concerns in May of this year, as the expansion rate is double the rate required, Farming UK, May the 21st. In July, Blackdown Hills West Country Eggs, a Somerset family business, producing, packing and supplying eggs with a flock of 30,000, ceased trading due to commercial pressures, market forces and health reasons. Poultry News, August 2018. This followed news from Andy Crostand, trading manager at Central Egg Agency, saying he is swamped with eggs and struggling to find home for some grades. The Ranger News, July the 25th. This serious oversupply in the market has inevitably resulted in egg prices falling, prompting egg producers to call for a desperately needed price increase as feed costs surge, pushing some farmers to the brink. Farming UK, August the 14th. It is estimated that a UK free-range laying unit with 16,000 eggs consumes 780 tonnes over the lifetime of the flock. The increased food cost this year for a flock of 16,000 is £40,000, Farming UK, August 14th. Given this serious oversupply of free-range eggs, the resulting reduction in the price paid per egg and the increase in price for feeding the flock, the economic viability of the proposed free-range egg business is surely questionable. Kay Jobson, Sarum View, Winchester.
Another letter on the same subject, and it comes from Dr. Albert Gallen. Sir, further to the concerns raised previously in relation to the proposed egg farm at Crabwood for 32,000 hens, I would add another, that of health risks from airborne disease. A number of research projects have been undertaken in the United Kingdom, the Netherlands, Germany and the USA, and all have demonstrated that poultry dust produced from intensive poultry farming of the type proposed at Crabwood is a known source of bacterial, fungal and endotoxin contamination. The usual practice, which will be the case at Crabwood, is for such poultry dust to be vented from the poultry house into the atmosphere via unfiltered chimneys. There will be 20 unfiltered chimneys at Crabwood. The resulting emissions from the chimneys will result in an unpleasant odour in the local area, but more seriously, the research has found that such emissions pose a serious risk to human health, particularly to children and to people with respiratory problems. Studies investigating the health of communities living near intensive farms have found that the workers at such farms suffered more than the usual respiratory health problems, and they also identified a notable increase in asthma amongst children living or attending schools nearby. The risk is at its greatest within a 1 kilometre radius of the source, which, from Crab Wood, would include a number of nearby properties, the Pinsent campsite, Crabwood SSSI, part of the Clarendon Way, and part of the course at the Royal Winchester Golf Club. All of these areas are used by significant numbers of people. The poultry dust is not, however, limited to within 1 kilometre of the farm, and has been shown to be carried well beyond this. Due to the site's elevated position and depending on the direction and strength of the wind, many more people could be at risk, as the dust would travel over large swathes of Winchester and surrounding villages. It is worth noting that this farm of intensive farming is totally out of character in this region of Hampshire, and Dr. Gallen lives in Sarum Road in Winchester.
And now for a letter on something completely different. And it's from Lucy Thomas, and it's headed Sexist Men. Sir, as a woman, I like the idea that I can wear whatever I want, so long as I feel confident and like the clothes on myself. So when I go outside wearing my favourite skirt, why does the outside world make me feel stupid and ugly and like I don't belong? Why do I feel vulnerable in my own town? Has society shaped the way we choose our wardrobe and marginalised the choice of outfit? Lots of women love wearing clothes of fashion and trend. The whole act of wearing close-fitting clothes exudes body confidence and is a great encouragement for anti-body shaming. Wearing that short dress should give women a sense of pride and self-empowerment. However, often it is treated with dirty glares and peering eyes. This society in which body confidence is seen as ugly and revealing any skin is either treated with slut or unwanted attention is the society we have grown to accept and maybe even join in. When we women show the tiniest bit of skin, all eyes are on us, either accusing us of being perverted. Yet a topless man on a sunny day bides no attention and would never be provocative and disgusting. I don't like this world I am growing up in and don't know why we go on accepting this. I thought we were past the age of hiding the beauty of women's bodies, but it seems we are just beginning a new generation of the same shame and discrimination. This isn't a targeted attack. This is an announcement to the world to stop caring what everyone else wears, and rather than disgracing others, complimenting their style and respecting their body. And that comes from Lucy Thomas, Dean Lane, Teg Down, Winchester.
And the next letter comes from Karen Barrett. Sir, so the report, which includes criticism of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, comes as not a huge surprise to Winchester MP Steve Bryan, Chronicle, September the 27th. More to the point, what does he, as a health minister and the government, propose to do about staffing levels and skills not always sufficient to meet needs of patients? Page 19 of the report. Will they start funding the NHS properly, so that staff are not so stretched that they have to sometimes cover tasks for which they have not been trained? Will they improve pay and conditions for the thousands of low-paid admin workers, the essential cogs that keep the NHS machine running? Will ministers call a halt to increasing privatisation, which has seen health providers like Virgin Care make enormous profits for shareholders at public expense? Will they make a commitment not to extend access to our NHS market to US companies as part of any post-Brexit trade deal? Last but not least, will Mr. Bryan, as the local MP, commit to opposing any plan to close accident and emergency at RHCH, apart from the impact on his constituents, the closure would inevitably put extra pressure on Basingstoke and Southampton, but sadly appears to be on the agenda of the various acronyms now running the NHS. Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Brief observation on local traffic, and it's headed, a new sign, but nothing else. Sir, we've just noticed the new sign on the A33 south of the Cart and Horses Junction at Kingsworthy. There's no money for the roundabout that's desperately needed, but apparently we can have a sign that at speed you can hardly register. Not sure why it's there, but sure that Councillor Rob Humby will have an answer. And that comes from Mr. R. Whittier, Church Lane in Easton, and there's a picture there, and sure enough there's a road sign which you actually can't see because it's obscured mainly behind a very large tree.
And now a letter from Councillor Kim Gottlieb, headed illogical. Sir, there is a logic to the development process that still seems to escape Winchester City Council. That logic demands that one has a sound development concept and a robust financial picture before spending large amounts of money taking the project forward. In the case of Station Approach, the council has now spent close to £2 million and is quickly heading towards £3 million without having a clear plan which explains how that money will be recovered and a profit made, or for who will actually deliver the project. This irrational financial approach applies also to the Bar End Sports Centre, where the council has already spent similar sums without yet knowing if the development will be viable. Although both schemes need amending as a result of flaws in their concept, the city needs them to be successfully resolved. Unfortunately, the approach the council continues to take will make that much less likely to happen. And that's from Councillor Kim Gottlieb of East Stratton.
And next we have Dale Thompson's letter, which concerns Euro Alfred. Sir, a correspondent last week questioned the image of King Alfred on the exit from Brexit posters that are being displayed around Winchester. I disagree. It is entirely appropriate that King Alfred is depicted on a poster that calls for us to retain links with Europe. His policies were aimed at bringing people together in the belief that everyone was more powerful and more prosperous when they collaborated with neighbouring states rather than set up barriers against them. With his international outlook, I am confident that he would have been in favour of remaining in a trade and security collaboration with our nearest neighbours. Dale Thompson, Compton Road, Winchester.
If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can telephone 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. You can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now, looking back, we begin with the news from 200 years ago. Thank you, John.
Yes. Monday, October the 12th, 1818. On Wednesday, an inquest was taken at Abington Lodge on view of the body of John Tomlin, head gamekeeper to the Marquess of Buckingham, who, on returning from Winchester on the Thursday evening, proceeding with his wife and family in a cart, by some accident was thrown out, and the wheel passed over him. Although no external marks appeared on the body, yet on its being opened by a surgeon on the direction of the coroner, it proved that the back and three of his ribs were broken, and that one side of the lungs was much lacerated. Verdict, accidental death.
100 years ago, Saturday, October the 12th, 1918. Since August 1914, Winchester has had the acquaintance of many commanding officers of troops, more than one of whom has gained a name in the war. Those who remained here for any length of time made friendships and thought of them as associated with what has always been the ideal of the best type of British soldiers, viz. That they were officers and gentlemen. But of none will happier memories be retained than of Colonel Samuel G. Jones, who from November of last year has been in command of the American troops, not only at the Winchester Rest Camp, but in the south of England generally. And the second item, the Bishop of Winchester will dedicate the restored North Chapel at the Church of St. Cross at noon on Monday next. The restoration of the North Chapel for the purpose of divine worship has been undertaken in thankful and affectionate remembrance of those connected with their lives for King and country.
Looking forward to 50 years ago, Saturday, October the 12th, 1968. Mr. Ronald Longley of 124 Oliver's Battery Road, Winchester, who is the present headmaster of Spalshott Church of England Primary School, has been appointed headmaster of the Dean County Junior School, New Alsford, and will take up his new position at Alsford at the beginning of 1969. Mr. Longley, who is 46 years of age, served in the Army between 1942 and 1947 in both the United Kingdom and the Middle East. He began his teaching career in 1949 in Hertfordshire and taught in schools in East Sussex, Wiltshire and Bath between 1953 and 1963.
And here we are in October 1993, two pieces from 25 years ago. A senior city councillor has forecast Winchester homes shortage will get, quote, worse and worse, as a new Morrie poll into housing needs was published this week. John Cloyne, Labour chair of the Housing Committee on the Power Sharing Council, was speaking on Wednesday at a seminar considering the results of the Morrie survey, which has cost council taxpayers around £20,000. Council officials have not released the exact price of the poll, but Chief Housing Officer Jeff Atkinson has noted that it cost, quotes, in the same ballpark as a previous 20,000 Morrie survey commissioned earlier this year. Mr. Cloyne bemoaned the powerless position of his City Council colleagues in tackling the housing problems, arising from Winchester's long-running financial dispute with the district auditor. Mr. Cloyne said, "In the last 2 years in Winchester, we have built a lot of social housing, and this has had a significant effect on reducing need. This was shown by the reductions in council house waiting lists. But now, that avenue has been closed off. The housing problem will just get worse and worse, and the only solution will be to build more houses." And the second piece. Winchester City Council voted on Wednesday to back the Keep Sunday Special campaign approach to Sunday opening of shops, which stops well short of total deregulation. The council had been asked to forward its views to the Association of District Councils, that's the ADC, by September the 20th. And the view put to the ADC was that of the Environmental Health Committee, which was to support total deregulation. But at a full council meeting on Wednesday, Roy Smith successfully argued an amendment, which was passed by 25 votes to 18. This was the approach of the Keep Sunday Special campaign, which started from the assertion that all shops should be shut on Sunday, unless registered with the local authority or exempt. The model proposed, councillors were told in a report, was complex. Some shops would be exempt and allowed to trade because of the goods and services they offered, but larger shops would be able to trade between 9 a.m. and 8 p.m. provided they registered with the local authority. The Chief Environmental Health Officer warned that should this be the option, it would be cumbersome and expensive to administer. But Roy Smith argued successfully for limiting retail activities on a Sunday.
Now, moving to our comment sections, Christian comment this week is read by Maria, followed by first person read by John, and Hampshire Chronicle comment read by Daphne. Thank you, Maria.
And Christian comment this week is written by the Reverend Philip Crinks and is headed How Saint Faith Came to Winchester. In Hampshire, we know St Faith's Road and St Faith's School in Winchester. We may know the beautiful hidden St Faith's Churchyard off St Cross Road. But who was St Faith and how did she come to Winchester? Around the year 290, in Agen in southern France, a girl called Foy was born, either into a Christian family or she converted as a child. At this time, Christians across the Roman Empire were persecuted for not following the official pagan religion. Foy was threatened with torture and death if refused to participate in pagan sacrifices. She remained faithful and, still young and unmarried, she was put to death around 300 AD, traditionally on October the 6th. Immediately, the local church in Agen proclaimed her Santa Foy, a virgin martyr. A basilica was built and dedicated to her. She became known across Europe, Santa Fe in Spanish, Sancta Fidei in Latin, and in English, St. Faith. In 866 AD, her remains were moved 150 miles east to the major church at Conques. This church was along the route to Compostela, still walked by pilgrims, as seen in the BBC's Road to Santiago. Devotion to St Faith spread along the pilgrim's way. Writers began to reconstruct Foy's life. Soon the imagination of English people was also captured by St Faith. When Henry III rebuilt Westminster Abbey in 1245, it was natural to dedicate a chapel to her. This chapel was still in a place of daily prayer today. By the 12th century, a parish church dedicated to St Faith stood between modern Kingsgate Road and St Cross Road. In 1445, St Faith's parish was joined to the newly expanded Hospital of St Cross by the then Bishop Henry Beaufort. St Faith's church fell into disrepair. It was demolished in 1507. The parish joined the hospital community for worship, as it has done now over 500 years. Baptisms take place each month in the ancient font brought from St Faith's church and installed in the southwest corner of St Cross Church. What would it be like to face such persecution for your beliefs that you had to choose between giving up your beliefs or your life? Perhaps the nearest comparison in our time and place are the sacrifices faced by the men and women in our armed forces. As General Mike Jackson put it in his film Duty and Death, each of them, but also each of us, has to decide. What will we stand for? What will we live for? What will we, if necessary, die for? That is what Santa Foy, our Saint Faith, decided, that she would stand for her Christian faith, even at the price of her life. That witness is what has inspired so many people over the centuries. And it was what in the end brought Saint Faith to Winchester. The Reverend Peter Crinks is priest in charge of St Faith's Parish at St Cross in Winchester.
And the first person contributor this week is Joanna Lewis, who contributes the typically entertaining, diverting set of observations on modern life. She's headed her piece this week, The Best Hairy Chest Type. What on earth is going on? I have lots of fabulous women friends who are single, solvent, sporty, stylish and sassy with successful careers. But where are the single male equivalents? If you're a single female over 40, then it seems your chances of romance are limited. If an eligible man is seen out, eligible now meaning a single man, without a ring through his nose, an electronic tag or a tattoo of a tarantula on his neck, then the effect is like spotting a lion roaming the Masai Mara. Quickly the news goes viral and the beast gets encircled by excited onlookers vying to get closest and have the best shot. It's partly a question of demographics. There are simply more older men than women. I'm sorry, the other way around. There are simply more older women than men nationally. Men can be more choosy, therefore, whilst women, in theory, have to join a queue behind ever more younger models. Suddenly, the bachelor who's lived with his mother for 50 years, who collects Princess Margaret memorabilia and enjoys canal holidays in Bavaria, finds to his delight that he has his pick of Liz Hurley lookalikes with expensive caramel highlights, Prada slingbacks and free tickets for the Six Nations. Alas, it's now too expensive for many people to divorce. Property prices having skyrocketed, you either opt for the spare room or the alternative, a bedsit or your old bedroom in your parents' house. Suddenly, marriage guidance seems a sensible option. Better the devil you know than the sociopath you don't. Another disincentive is the horror stories of internet dating. A male friend recently divorced swiped on a nice-looking young woman. He went bravely on his first date. Shaking with nerves, he entered the pub, sweating like a pig. Breathing was difficult, as he was rigidly holding in his beer belly. But after all the build-up, he couldn't see anyone resembling the woman he'd picked. Only a woman much older than him was sitting on her own. He assumed he'd been stood up until a rasping voice shouted out, "Over here, Barry! I'll have a pint of old peculiar and a packet of port scratchings." Carol had used her daughter's photo. Naughty Carol. Women trade stories of deception and disappointment. It's usually meeting men who claim to be single but are still living with their wives. "In my mind, I've separated," goes their reasoning. "Time to get your coat, girls." Or there's the man who's recently been dumped by his wife for his best mate since infant school, or for his sister. Understandably, he hasn't got over it. The evening consists of listening to the gory details and ends early when he sobs into your hair. Or there's the common tale of meeting someone who's posted up photos of himself skiing in Samaritz or sunbathing in the Maldives. Often these are honeymoon photos, 10 years old, and when they had hair. A selfie pushing a trolley round Tesco's after a night on the town, sporting a black eye and a Chelsea football strip, would definitely lower expectations. That's not to suggest all single women are looking for another relationship. Statistics also suggest more people are choosing to live on their own, content with their own company or watching Netflix. A recent survey found that the traditional stigma, often levied at the divorced woman, has finally gone, thankfully. And if you're exhausted from commuting, from following Brexit, working a 6-day week, or from your body pump class, then a glass of Prosecco in a hot bath, followed by pole dark, can be much more appealing than a Friday night pub crawl. My advice, if you want a handsome, hairy-chested type that likes long country walks and curling up on the sofa, is loyal and dependable and calm in a crisis, then your best bet is a black Labrador.
Editorial comment. The waste of missed NHS appointments. Most people profess to love the National Health Service as a keystone of our society. That is what people say, anyway. And yet many of us treat the NHS with, it seems, such contempt that we cannot be bothered to attend appointments or even let health staff know that we can't attend. Across England, almost 2.9 million appointments were missed in the 6 months at the start of the year. costing the NHS around £350 million. On average, an outpatient appointment costs the NHS £120, according to the latest resources cost data. In this part of Hampshire, an estimated £5.1 million was wasted through missed appointments in a recent six-month period. Of course, there will be genuine reasons why many appointments cannot be kept. An analysis of the reasons would be helpful. But there will be a lot of cases where people simply cannot be bothered. This is one of the problems of a service that is free at point of delivery. Some people don't set a value on it, take it for granted, and lack the intelligence to see how their actions impact others. It is frustrating because there is probably little that can be done about it, except for the NHS to spend time and resources on public information campaigns and sending out reminder letters. Money which could be better spent directly on healthcare.
Belgarum's alternative look at the week this week comprises three items, the first of which is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
And the first item deals with animal waste heating Marwell Zoo. An MP has praised the work of Marwell Zoo to reduce its environmental impact by using the animals to help power its boiler. With 700 tonnes of animal waste being generated, it is now being used as heating fuel in a groundbreaking project. Meon Valley MP George Hollingbury, who visited Marwell to see the boiler in action, said, "This is a great way to deal with a substantial amount of waste, and I commend Marwell for turning it into energy that helps to cut its costs and cut its carbon footprint." And there is a photo of George Hollingbury with a group of other people in the new tropical house at Marwell.
Row of apple trees on borrowed time. In this day and age, every tree is somehow considered sacred. But the row of eight apple trees on Middlebrook Street in Winchester appear to be an exception. As part of the planning guidance for the Central Winchester Regeneration, also known as Silver Hill 2, they'll be cut down. The City Council's thinking is that it's possible the bus station will be relocated to the Middlebrook Street car park, and it would be more attractive to open up the view of the cathedral looming over the high street for people arriving in the city. There's a photograph there of those, I must say, rather beautiful trees, which do a lot, I think, to beautify that end of Winchester. Be ashamed to see them go.
Falconer clearing pigeons from hospital. Pigeons are a bugbear for many in Winchester, particularly with the mess they leave on the Buttercross. So to find a solution, perhaps civic chiefs should look down at Southampton General Hospital's very own falconer. Andy Kroll, 57, has been its falconer for 2.5 years, working with his own four birds of prey to keep the grounds and vents clear of pigeons. The hawks, Willow and Eric, and falcons, Storm and Rouge, are trained to fly around the roofs and return to him when called. Before Andy and his birds got the job, there were more than 2,000 pigeons in, on and around the hospital, nesting in air vents and their debris built up, blocking gutters and drains. The team have since cleared 95% of the nuisance pigeons. Andy said, "The pigeons cause a lot of mess, and that mess can cause a health hazard. My birds are here to let the pigeons know that there are predators in the area and move them on. I try not to let my birds catch the pigeons and tempt them in with some nice juicy chicken." And that's accompanied by a photograph of Andy with one of his birds on his leather gauntlet. I'm not sure which one it is, but the background is Southampton Hospital. And the bird looks as if it's going to leap up at any minute to get after those pigeons.
This week's announcement begin with What's On, and here are some events that will be happening in and around Winchester in the forthcoming days. On Saturday the 20th of October, there's a one-day conference at Winchester Guildhall on the theme of Winchester, Early Medieval Power and Faith, which will include talks by Dr. Janina Ramirez, Professor Martin Biddle and Annabel Boys of Winchester Cathedral. A full-day ticket, which will include lunch and refreshments, costs £65. Full details are available from 01962 678 140. That's 01962 678 140. On Tuesday the 22nd of November, the lunchtime recital at Winchester Cathedral is given by violinist Ju Yeon Sir. On Thursday the 24th of October, at 7:30 p.m. in the 100 Men's Hall at the Hospital of St Cross, the Hampshire Archaeological Dowsers host a talk by Andrew Negus on Portsmouth harlots, dung and glory. The cost to members is £3 and to non-members £4, and I'm told all are welcome. Finally, the Winchester Musical and Operatic Society are presenting Singing in the Rain at the Theatre Royal Winchester from the 6th to the 10th of November. Tickets may be booked at the Theatre Royal box office, 01962 840 400. That's 01962 840 400. Lighting up time ends on Friday the 12th of October at 7:23 a.m. and begins at 6:19 p.m. On Wednesday the 17th of October, it ends at 7:32 a.m. and begins at 6:09 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have now received from us, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's 01962 711 998. Now we continue with items of general news, and the first item is read by Maria. Thank you, Maria.
Rock star treatment for Sir David at Store. National Treasurer Sir David Attenborough greeted a select group of fans in Winchester at an exclusive book signing. There were minders and queues of fans down the street. Sir David, who won the hearts of the nation through TV series such as Planet Earth, Blue Planet and Africa, was at Waterstones in the High Street. Despite pleas from fans desperate to meet him, only around 300 people obtained tickets. The private event was closely managed, with the press excluded and guests told photos with the 92-year-old would not be allowed. Queues formed along the High Street from around 3 p.m. when the store was temporarily closed, with Sir David being snuck in with minders through the store's back entrance in St George's Street. He was there as part of a tour following the re-release of Life on Earth. It has been released in hardback to celebrate 40 years since it was first published. The special edition has been updated to take the reader on an unforgettable journey of discovery from the very first spark of life to the blue and green wonder we know today. Sir David began his illustrious career with the BBC in 1952, and since then his work has earned nearly 20 awards, including Emmys and BAFTAs. He has also received the National Television Awards Special Recognition Accolade, the BAFTA Fellowship, and a knighthood. And there are two photos. There's one of Sir David walking into Waterstones with his minders, very burly looking minders actually, and the other photo, the queues of people who are hoping to get a glimpse of him.
German runners arrive. A team of 23 German relay runners received a warm welcome in their twin town of Winchester after completing an 835-kilometre challenge. The runners from Gießen were greeted by the German flag flying from the Guildhall after running from the German town to Winchester in just over 9 days. Their route took them through Holland, Belgium and France before their final stretch along the South Downs Way. They were joined for the last 20 kilometres on Friday by members of the Winchester and District Running Club and by participants of Winchester's weekly park run. The Geeson runners were also welcomed to the Winchester Park Run on Saturday to help celebrate the 14th anniversary of Park Run UK. Mayor Councillor Frank Pearson, who was at the finish line in Abbey Gardens and hosted a buffet to mark their arrival, said, "It was an honour to welcome these fantastic guests into our city. It's particularly special that they originate from our German twin town of Gießen, a relationship we have been very proud of since 1962. We hope they enjoy the wonderful sights that Winchester has to offer. And there's a rather lovely picture of all of the runners gathered together, big smiles and unfurled flags in Abbey Gardens just behind the mayor's house. And there's the mayor with them with a beaming smile, but sadly not in his running shorts."
Annual harvest celebrations. It's a celebration of the fertility of the land, providing us with the food that we need. The harvest weekend at Winchester Cathedral saw thousands of people pop into the cathedral close to see the dozens of displays on offer. Saturday was marred by poor weather, but Sunday saw the sun come out, fitting for an event that celebrates farming. There was lots to see: old tractors and new tractors, carriage rides, and lots of stalls showing off the produce of the county, from vegetables to meat and wine. Falconry displays and farm animals captivated the attention of visitors, and local farmers were kept busy by the bustle of customers at their market stalls. A special evensong to celebrate the harvest took place inside the cathedral on Sunday to draw an end to another successful year of the Hampshire Festival. And that's accompanied by some wonderful photographs. There's a trio of very happy gardeners holding a bunch of carrots and parsnips, looking very pleased with themselves. Some children doing what looks like rather messy painting. A sweet little couple of tots sitting in a tractor. A dad looking at a very old tractor. And a couple sitting in the sun, soaking it all up.
House that comes with a palace attached. An 8-bedroom home has been put on the market for nearly £2.5 million, but the sale would see the new owner picking up the keys to more than just the house. The Bishop's Waltham property, set in 9.7 acres of land and owned by one of Hampshire's cultural Hampshire culture's leading figures, comes with a tennis court, gym and swimming pool, plus the ruins of a 12th century palace. The £2.475 million asking price would also see the owners secure 5 bathrooms, an annex, a former coach house and paddocks. Alan Lovell, a well-known businessman and chairman of the Board of Trustees at Hampshire Cultural Trust, said he was selling the home because he needed to downsize. He said, "We've been there for 30 years, but our girls have moved out now. We would ideally like to live locally." Being sold by estate agent Savills, the property is described as having an array of characterful period features. Within the gardens, there are also man-made streams built as far back as the 13th century. The property currently has planning permission to extend the master bathroom and add a shower room. The house, Palace House, was built primarily in the 1690s. It's the only house that's within the walls of the palace ruins. Some of the materials from the palace were used for the house. According to English Heritage, which maintains the ruins, Bishop's Waltham Palace was one of the homes of the Bishop of Winchester, one of the richest churchmen in Europe at the time of the Middle Ages. It was first built by Henry of Blois in the 12th century and was remodelled and extended in the 14th and 15th centuries. The palace was badly damaged in the Civil War before being abandoned. As well as housing bishops and hosting kings, Henry II and Richard I, it was home to Admiral Sir Andrew Brown Cunningham, one of Britain's most distinguished naval commanders after the Second World War. In the 16th century, Henry VIII, Thomas Cromwell, and Cardinal Wolsey often stayed, and the Treaty of Waltham was signed, which pledged an alliance between Henry VIII and the Holy Roman Emperor, Charles V. And there is a picture of this, what must be a magnificent house, but it's you can't see it that well because there's so many trees, and the garden just looks beautiful.
News of a rather exciting new local event. The piece is entitled Classic Cars on Show. A car that used to belong to Rod Stewart featured as part of a motoring event near Sutton Scotney last week. The rock star's canary yellow Lamborghini Miura was one of the many classic cars on display at the Winchester Autobahn and Drivers Club Saturday breakfast. Over 200 car fans attended the gathering at the former Hill Farm garage at the junction of the A272 and the A30 and were given the chance to admire a range of models and makes. The family event was the first of many planned for the Hill Farm garage by new owner and Winchester resident Niall Holden, who is set to rename the site the Winchester Autobahn and Drivers Club. He said, "Obviously, we're going to continue the garage's core business of servicing and MOTing local cars. But I've been collecting classic cars all my life, and I know there are plenty of others out there who share the same passion and might have a gem hidden in their garage. If you're an enthusiast, get in touch and come along. And yes, that includes you, Rod Stewart." And there's lots of good pictures there of people enjoying the Saturday morning occasion, looking at lots of local, beautiful cars, many from local people, including that lovely yellow car that used to belong to Rod.
Work starts on barriers. Work to create the permanent defence barriers on Winchester High Street is due to start on Monday and is expected to be completed by early November. The contractors will start work at the top of the High Street, moving down towards the Broadway. Access to all the shops and businesses will be maintained at all times, and events due to be held and shortly after completion will be unaffected. The new barriers will be installed in similar locations to the existing temporary concrete ones. The council says the design combines both planting and seating so that they are an attractive and welcome addition to the High Street, as well as providing protection to pedestrians and local businesses. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for Environmental and Transport, said, "These new barriers will improve the High Street. Replacing the temporary concrete barriers with a design in keeping with our attractive city centre will enhance the pedestrianised area and give shoppers and visitors a place to stop and rest when they need to. Ultimately, these barriers are a sensible precaution to keep people safe and protect property. They will provide reassurance to residents, visitors and business owners in the High Street. We're pleased to get this work underway and swiftly completed before the Christmas market and other events taking place over the winter season. Completion is due to be Friday, November the 9th.
Pilgrimage to celebrate their patron saint. A group of Winchester parishioners made a pilgrimage to Westminster Abbey on Saturday to celebrate their patron saint, St Faith. There was also a reunion as the pilgrims were welcomed by Reverend Mark Birch, a former vicar of St Faith's in St Cross Road, who is now a canon at the Abbey. During the day, the party from Winchester were invited to attend a choral evensong performed by the Abbey Choir. They were also given a tour around the grounds that explained the historical links between the Abbey and the Hospital and Church of St Cross. In the evening, the pilgrims attended a night prayer service with Reverend Birch in St Faith's Chapel, Westminster. Reverend Dr Philip Crinks, the current vicar of St Faith's in Winchester, said, This was an inspirational visit for our group, and we look forward to maintaining the link between Winchester and Westminster Abbey. And there is a picture of the Reverend Dr. Philip Crinks, who's the current Vicar of St. Faith's, and the Reverend Mark Birch.
And now for some news of a local planning controversy out at Preston Candover. Villagers oppose plans for pub as planners consider proposal. A battle over development at a pub was due to reach a climax last night. Campaigners say the future of the Purefoy Arms in Preston Candover is in jeopardy because of plans for housing development. And last night, Basingstoke and Dean Council's planning committee heard arguments from over 100 local residents and users of the Purefoy Arms against the plan, which would convert a substantial part of the pub into housing. Red Oak Taverns, who own the Grade 2 listed building, have made a development proposal that, quotes, harms the long-term viability of the Purefoy Arms and is contrary to policy. So says Mark Ruffle, the local councillor, who's urged planners to refuse approval. Some 120 people lodged their opposition to Red Oak Tavern's plans because they fear it will affect the viability of the award-winning gastropub and also harm a listed building. But planning officers are recommending that the plan be approved. Stephen Hoyle, spokesman for the villagers, said, "It beggars belief that anyone with an appreciation of historic buildings and townscapes could come to the conclusion that attaching an alien construction, devoid of any architectural merit and equal in footprint size, if not larger, to the current public house, would not have an adverse impact." Despite these plans, the pub has recently received a massive boost to its potential, with award-winning chef Gordon Stott taking over as landlord. His ambition is, quote, "for the Purefoy Arms to gain a national reputation for outstanding pub food and to become one of the UK's top gastropub destinations." It's already brought him lots of attention from the national and local press, with great reviews in the Daily Telegraph, The Sun and the Basingstoke Gazette. Mark Grunnell of Red Oak Taverns, in a letter to the parish council, said, "The primary function of Red Oak Taverns is the operation of public houses. Very occasionally our public houses are redeveloped, but only after a careful assessment of the viability of the business has been undertaken. The current application includes two elements. First of all, letting rooms to further improve the viability of the pub, and secondly, the conversion of outbuildings into two homes, which makes efficient use of the site and allows for further reinvestment into the pub. The outbuildings are very dilapidated and have not been used by the pub for many years. We feel it makes sense to undertake a sensitive conversion rather than to let them decay any further."
Cheers! Rare bottle reaches 849k. A rare bottle of whiskey has been sold for a world record £848,750 at auction. Described by experts as the holy grail of whiskey, the bottle of the 1926 Macallan Valerio Adami attracted attention from some of the world's most serious collectors. It fetched a hammer price of £700,000 plus a buyer's premium of £148,750 in the auction at Bonhams in Edinburgh last Wednesday. It had been expected to fetch between £700,000 and £900,000, and Bonhams, of course, is one of our local auction houses here. The whisky is officially described as a 60-year-old, having been created in 1926 and bottled in 1986. Martin Green, Bonhams whisky specialist in Edinburgh, said, "I am delighted at this exceptional result. It is a great honour to have established a new world record and particularly exciting to have done so in Scotland, the home of whisky. The Macallan 1926 60-year-old has been described as the holy grail of whisky. Its exceptional rarity and quality puts it in a league of its own, and the world's most serious whisky collectors will wait patiently for many years for a bottle to come onto the market. Bonhams said the previous world record was set by the auction house in May this year, when another bottle of the Macallan Valerio Adami, 1926, was sold for £814,081. Macallan commissioned two pop artists, Valerio Adami and Peter Blake, to design labels for a very limited edition of 24 bottles. 12 carried the Adami label, and 12 had the Blake design. It is not known how many Adami bottles still exist. One is said to have been destroyed in an earthquake in Japan in 2011, and it is believed at least one of them was drunk. The bottle sold on Wednesday was bought by the seller direct from the Macallan Distillery for an undisclosed sum in 1994. In May, Bonhams Hong Kong sold a bottle of the Macallan Peter Blake 1926 60-year-old for £751,703. And there's a picture of this very exclusive bottle sitting securely in a glass case, which looks to be locked up. And it has a most intriguing label designed by Valerio Adami.
New shop opened by Citizens Advice. Citizens Advice has won £500 worth of vouchers upon helping to open a new store in Winchester. The Winchester district of the charity received in-store vouchers for Cook, which has recently opened in St George's Street. Cook had posted an advertisement on Facebook in search of a worthy local hero to open their recently purchased branch. Natalie Webb, chief officer of the Citizens Advice Winchester district, responded to the post saying she knew 107 local heroes, referring to her work colleagues. Cook then invited Natalie to officially open the new store by cutting the ribbon. She said, "Our staff and volunteers are a wonderful and inspiring group of individuals who make an enormous difference to the lives of local people in crisis. As a Cook fan myself, I'm thrilled that we can provide our staff and guests at our annual guest meeting with something a little bit special to show our appreciation for all that they do." And there is a photo of Natalie about to cut the ribbon, but she's snipping away and with a big smile on her face. And she's standing next to Gaynor, who's the Cook Winchester manager.
Steve completes hospice challenge. A Hampshire marathon enthusiast has completed 21 marathons in 21 days in aid of a children's hospice. Steve Radgen, 56, crossed the finishing line at Naomi House in Sutton Scotney after running 550 miles in 3 weeks. He was greeted with cheers from his family, friends, hospice residents and workers, as well as Hampshire athlete Luke Sinnott, who lost his legs in Afghanistan. For 3 weeks, Steve ran a marathon every day to raise money for Naomi House and Jack's Place in aid of their 21st birthday. After crossing the line, Steve thanked all those who'd supported him. He said, "I wanted to do something to celebrate Naomi House's fantastic work. The experience has been full of highs and lows, but it's great to give something back to such a wonderful place." And there's a picture of Steve having just crossed the line, being embraced by another athlete and looking absolutely exhausted.
And this next item is also to do with Naomi House, and it's headed Minister Tours Hospice. The Minister of State for Care, Carolyn Dynage, visited Naomi's house and Jack's Place to see the services on offer to life-limited children. She joined Chief Executive Mark Smith and Director of Care Leslie Brooke on a tour of the hospice. The Minister visited the care floor to meet children and young adults in Naomi House and Jack's Place, as well as visiting the sensory room, hydrotherapy suite, music therapy room, gardens and bedrooms. She also met a family in the hospice's new long-term ventilation unit. a special service allowing newly ventilated children to leave the clinical environment of hospital and stay in comparative comfort. She took time to learn about the different departments and their role in supporting the most medically complex children in southern England. Caroline said, "Naomi House and Jack's Place provide an invaluable service for children and young people with a variety of needs, using advanced technology to help staff provide high-quality care in a warm and compassionate environment. It was a pleasure to visit and talk to the dedicated nurses and care staff who do such an incredible job, as well as meet Dottie and her family in the new long-term ventilation unit, the first of its kind in a hospice setting." Mark Smith, chief executive at the charity, said, "We would like to thank Caroline Dynage for taking the time to visit our hospices today. It was a great opportunity to show her our facilities, introduce her to our highly skilled staff, and discuss our future plans with her."
1,000 runners tackle the Clarendon Way Marathon. They ran cross-country, through woods, along trails, up killer hills and fast downhill sections. From Salisbury to Winchester, more than 1,000 people took part in the Rotary-organised Clarendon Marathon on Sunday for the 20th year of the event. While some ran the full 26.2 miles along the ancient Clarendon Way, others took part in a half marathon starting in Broughton. There was also a relay race and a mini marathon 5 miles from Farley Mount. All the runners received a medal handed out by the 11th and 14th Winchester Scout Group as they crossed the finishing line at King's School to cheers from the crowd. Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Frank Pearson, who handed out trophies, said, "It's a fantastic event, a really challenging route. It was very wet and muddy last year, but this year was sunny, so conditions were better. Those taking part were a mix of elite runners, club level and fun runners challenging their own personal bests. A big cheer went up for 11-year-old Ben Salter from WADAC as he crossed the finishing line. Ben ran the last leg of a relay in the half marathon with teammates. JJ Heath Caldwell, chairman of the organising committee who ran in the half marathon, said, "Huge congratulations to all those who took part and raised thousands of pounds for their chosen charities. The Clarendon is only made possible by the very large number of people who support it, the sponsors, volunteers, and of course, the participants, without whom the event wouldn't exist." And there is a photo of some finishing runners looking very pleased with themselves, and they don't look too exhausted, actually.
One council preparing for UK's Brexit. Only one of West Hampshire's four main councils is preparing for Brexit, it's been revealed. Hampshire County Council says it is currently producing a report looking at what impact leaving the European Union on March the 29th will have on the region and its residents. The authority said the report will look at the effects of a Brexit outcome, both with and without a deal. But, disclosing the information under a Freedom of Information request, Southampton City Council, along with Test Valley Borough Council, both confirmed that they had not undertaken a Brexit impact study and had no plans to conduct one. The main reason given by both councils was not wanting to spend, quote, excessive amounts of taxpayers' cash on conducting a report that has many unknowns. Winchester City Council did not respond to the request. It comes less than 6 months before the UK leaves the EU on March the 29th. Hampshire County Council leader Roy Perry said, "Brexit is not easy, and setting a balanced budget with this in mind is not easy. I try as hard as I can to keep the council out of the Brexit debate, but we'll need to make our own assessment. We'll look to make our own assessment on the implications for the people of Hampshire with or without a deal. There will be implications, so it's important that we make sure that we're as well prepared as we can be."
Village Coffee Morning raises cancer fight cash. Nearly £800 has been raised by villagers near Winchester to help fight cancer. That comes as the Sparsholt Shop Coffee Morning, held in support of cancer charity Macmillan, was labelled as an outstanding success. The event, held at the end of last month, was organised by Jeanette Davies and held on the memorial ground in the middle of the village. Dozens of residents and friends of the village came out to support the fundraising event with generous donations of cakes and biscuits. Following the event, organisers said, "The event raised almost £800 and our thanks go to all those who baked, helped on the day and importantly came along and supported the event." The event was supported by Winchester City Council leader and ward councillor Caroline Horrell, and it's accompanied by a lovely picture of the organiser with two small boys who are looking longingly at the gorgeous display of cakes. And in the background, Caroline Horrell is obviously very busy wearing an apron.
Evacuation of Brooks. Firefighters were called to a Winchester shopping centre after an alarm sparked an evacuation on Friday afternoon. The Brooks Shopping Centre, which has entrances on both Middle Brook Street and Upper Brook Street, was evacuated after an alarm went off, but people were allowed back in after around half an hour. A spokesman for Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service confirmed they were called to the shopping centre to investigate an alarm at 3:10 p.m. One crew from Winchester Fire Station attended, and it was confirmed as a false alarm.
It's a good bit of local news. Veterans thanks for charity help. A Royal Navy veteran from Hampshire, traumatised by his service, has praised the national charity for helping him to return to employment. Chris O'Donnell of Bishop's Waltham is one of the veterans who were part of the Poppy Factory's Getting You Back to Work programme. It recently celebrated the milestone of helping 1,000 wounded, injured and sick veterans with a reception attended by Chris and the Duchess of Cornwall. Chris developed post-traumatic stress disorder after his service in the Royal Navy. Chris said, "I spent 15 years in the Royal Navy and I received the Queen's commendation for brave conduct. I didn't feel like I deserved it though, as my act of bravery was overshadowed by an empty feeling of failure." He added, "After leaving the Navy, I started to wonder whether I'd made the right decision. And although I didn't know it at the time, I was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder." The veteran received mental health treatment in Chicago, but decided that it just made him feel more vulnerable than before. He returned to the UK and was introduced to Rachel from the Poppy Factory. Chris says, "Rachel provided the support that I'd been missing. Together we were able to explore the things that I wanted to do. We looked for opportunities in areas that interested me, and I was keen to experience life in a different way." Chris now works as a quality assurance engineer at Siemens, based in London. He said, "I enjoy it, and I feel like I'm giving to society rather than taking." And there's a rather lovely picture of Chris chatting to the Duchess of Cornwall at the Poppy Factory reception in London, both with great big smiles on their faces.
Animal Awards. Winchester City Council's animal welfare team have been recognised by the RSPCA. Dave Griffiths and Ross Shepherd of the team won Gold Footprint Awards for their work protecting, rehoming and returning stray dogs to their owners and ensuring establishments are providing suitable care for animals. The RSPCA has also acknowledged the housing team's work with council tenants and their pets by giving them the Silver Footprint Award. Councillor Jan Warwick, portfolio holder for environment at Winchester City Council, said, "I am delighted that the hard work and excellent standards of the council have been recognised by the RSPCA. Congratulations to everyone involved for this outstanding achievement. The team will receive their award at a ceremony in London next month."
And that concludes our extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. Thank you to our copying and dispatch and studio preparation teams. Particular thanks to our readers, Maria Head.
Goodbye.
John Regan.
Cheerio.
And Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
And from me, Tom Williams, goodbye. And do enjoy your week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside the wallet, please ensure the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside. Thank you.